You guys ready to do this?
Welcome to the Cap Space Wins Cubs podcast.
Cap Space Wins Cubs podcast, episode 93, I think, on the Area 51 Sports Network. I am your host, Hassan Ahmed. I am joined alongside, as per usual, my twin brother, Asan Ace Ahmed. Ace, how's it going, buddy?
Good, man. How's it going?
And, of course, by Hussein Hustamus Ahmed.
What's up, boys?
No Andy again this week. Ace, what did we talk about last week? Don't ask
I
me how I'm doing.
I regret it as soon as I started.
Before we get started, we'd like to thank the title sponsor of this week's episode, No Name Hockey. No Name Hockey provides quality hockey sticks without breaking the bank. No more paying $300 plus for a twig. Try out No Name Hockey, offering high-end hockey sticks for the no-names out there and the players currently making a name. Use code AREA51 for $10 off one item, and that stacks as you buy more. You guys all right here? There's a lot of moving around of computers and wires over here, but we're good. Okay. I say we skip the pleasantries today, guys. It is a Saturday night, Sunday morning technically, almost 1 a.m. here, Pacific time, and we're just grinding out a podcast because that's what we do around here. So we're just gonna hammer this thing out. But I think people are pretty upset, rightfully so.
Sorry, guys, can I say one thing before
we
start?
Yeah, of course.
We were supposed to do a post-game show today.
Yes.
We decided not to. We were going to record the post-game show, but we do record our episodes on Saturday usually, and we were kind of taught in between whether thinking we should record a post-game show and splice it into the episode or kind of wait it out or record all the episode all at once. But we decided to wait it out and plan the show how we usually do and give our full thoughts. And this will kind of serve as a post-game show of sorts as well. But
for the game in Philly.
For the game in Philadelphia, yes, obviously, depending on when you listen to this. But this is going to be out Sunday morning, so, you know,
you'll have a
this
day.
Will pretty much be out as soon as we're not recording it, I'll be honest with you. But I just wanted to get that in there. Right on. Okay, thank you, Ace. So, to wrap the Canucks week, the Canucks start the season 0-2-0. They started the season by blowing a 3-goal lead in Edmonton to Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. They were up 3-0 after playing a fantastic first period. They came, Oilers come storming back, and the Canucks fall off and fizzle meekly into the night and drop the opening. They go to Philly. They do not come out with the same guns a-blazing, pants on fire effort that they had against the Edmonton Oilers. But they get outshot 11-4 in the first period. But they come away with a 2-goal lead on the backs of the unsuspecting Kyle, the unexpected Kyle Burrows going bar down to open the scoring. And then Vasily Podkolzin makes a nice play to Connor Garland, who buries one in tight on Carter Hart with Captain Bo Horvat driving the net. And that puts the Canucks up 2. And the Canucks do blow that 2-0 lead as well and fall 3-2 to the Philadelphia Flyers. This is seen to become a... Do you guys want to talk about the game in Philly specifically first before we get into like the macro stuff? Yeah, you said.
Yeah,
let's do it. Okay, let's talk about the game in Philly.
What the fuck happened? We talked about the game in Edmonton on our post-game show already, so...
What the fuck happened, guys? What the fuck happened in Philadelphia?
Hussein.
Oh, man. I don't even know where to start.
Try to just keep the... I just want to quickly. Just try to keep the topics about on-ice plays...
Strictly on-ice.
Strictly on-ice things. Let's try to keep to that sort of level, and then we'll kind of shift gears and talk about...
Got it.
...the slow start and specific players and things like that. So just light on me. What the fuck happened?
All right. Well, the Canucks got off to a terrible start. For some reason, Philadelphia has been a hard building for them to play in recent years and recent memory. And... You know what? Credit to the Canucks to get up to a 2-goal lead because, you know, that's sometimes what, you know, I'm going to throw the word out there, the G word, sometimes good teams do that. They get up on leads and they build themselves up and they can win games when they're not playing their best. You know, I thought maybe the Canucks are doing that, and it was really then it really turned into a vintage Canucks game. Let's just let Demko steal us one when we need one. And I just don't know what happened. I mean, actually, I do know what happened. It's two words, JT Miller, baby. And my two biggest concerns with this game before I pass it off to you guys. One, the defense. I'm sure we're going to get into this like we do every episode.
My contract sucks.
Yep. And two, the lines combinations. I didn't really like it. I'm not really sure why Bruce was so keen on keeping them together. And the very last thing, I guess I have three things then. I say it every week. I say it every time the season starts. You can't win in the NHL if you don't win the special teams battle. The Canucks lose the special teams battle again, and look at that. They're 0-2.
Saying, you know that Simpsons meme of Bart when he's got the line and everybody's like turning to see him in the classroom and they say, come on, say the line.
Yeah.
And then we got to make one with you where it's going to be like, if you don't win the specialties battle, you won't win the game.
Yes.
You got to make that because that's your catchphrase.
That is my catchphrase on this spot, yes.
Ace, what about you? I mean, yeah, they were very fortunate to be up 2-0 after that first period. I thought kind of they, you know, these day games seem to never be good for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a bit of a sleepy start, and it definitely seemed like they were kind of moving in quickstand out there. But, you know, a couple explosive, like, you know, a fantastic shot by Kyle Burrows to beat Carter Hart, and then a nice play by Connor Garland, and a few foul outs by Thatcher Demko, and suddenly you're up 2-0. Tucker Pullman left this game in the middle of the second period as well and did not return. Yeah. Canucks play the 5D. So, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, that. I guess we don't really know the extent of that injury, or if it was related to his head, or what it was. But anyways, my point was, they were fortunate to be up 2-0. But you'd think, hope that a team that just blew a 3-goal lead a couple nights ago would have understood the position that they were in and what they needed to do to shut things down. And you know, two games a season does not make, but it's kind of in the same story here where they've gotten up to a nice lead and just haven't been able to hold it. This game was slightly different because, you know, they weren't necessarily playing well, so maybe it was a bit more understandable why the Flyers were able to come back, because the Flyers were definitely carrying the game for most of it, in my opinion. But the Flyers do not have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, so you would think...
Hell, the Flyers don't even have JT Miller or Elias Pettersson on their team.
Oh, well, sure, it looks like they did have him today. Sean Lawton looked better than both of them.
So the talent level...
The pure talent
discrepancy there, and the fact that they basically spotted you a 2-goal lead after 20 minutes. I'm sorry, for a team that has aspirations to make the playoffs, and, you know, hopefully more, you've got to be able to shut that game down and get out of there with a win.
Yeah, I mean, I would. Yeah, I mean. I mean, I'm sure we're gonna play the. I'm gonna give you a little heads up notice here, Ace. I'm looking for a clip here. You'll know which one I want in a minute here. I mean, I know it's everybody's favorite word around this market, and I don't. It seems to mean anything these days. But every time one of these losses happens, you say it's unacceptable. And I know a lot of players say it, and a lot of fans say it, but it doesn't seem to mean much to me if the effort doesn't change all night. And again, another loss, another blown lead, another press conference from the captain, Bo Horvat, where he drops these lines.
I think it's just, I mean, I don't have all the answers, but to me, I think it's just a matter of bearing down and bearing it. I think, well, last game at least, and obviously this game I didn't think was as good as last game, but it's not like we're not getting our looks or not getting our shots. It's just a matter of bearing down, hitting the net, and bearing our loose opportunities, and right now we're not doing that.
What about the two shorties against those similar, and that both were... passes through traffic at the...
Yeah, I mean, obviously those aren't acceptable. Those are on us, and those are big moments in the game where, you know, that's their tying goal, and that about both occasions. And for us, that's not good enough, especially the amount of skill we have on our unit and the amount of success we had last year. It's just not good enough right now.
Yeah, there was at the end there unacceptable line Doherty drops. If everything's unacceptable, but everything keeps the same things keep happening, at a certain point it is acceptable. Look, I love Bo Horvat. I've said it on this podcast many times. Bo Horvat's probably one of my favorite Vancouver Canucks. Probably my favorite. I remember when he got drafted and he brought a lot of hope to the organization and he was a premier player for them for a while. I am not one of these people who stands here and holds the problems of the team at the captain, but constantly coming out and saying this is unacceptable, that's unacceptable, but the same things keep happening. I'm not saying this is Bo Horvat's fault or one individual player's fault, but it's not. It can't, like, I don't understand how you can keep continuing for this to happen. The team talked for months about how they didn't want to come off to a good start. They think they're a different team than this, and they think they're a better team than what they showed for parts of last season. It doesn't look like they are, because they're doing all the same things that made them bad at the beginning of last season. And you can't blame the coach. You got the new coach. You can't blame the GM. You got a new GM. You got better players now too. So what are the excuses here? And at the end of the day, I am here for people to criticize Rutherford. I'm here for people to criticize Boudreau, criticize the owner, do whatever you want. At the end of the day, the game is played on the ice and the players played and they did not play well enough. Why is that happening? I don't really have a specific answer for that, but it is something you think you'd have to change. And if you're looking at it from like, yeah, what went wrong in this game, Canucks special teams have done again. The power play isn't clicking at all. They try Besser, they try Kuzmenko. It just doesn't seem at all. It doesn't seem to work at all. I don't know why that is. The Canucks have five players you would think, yes, can probably run an NHL power play, and they have it at different times. But this whatever they're doing right now isn't working. And for some reason, you know, Jason King has been around here for all these power plays, and it doesn't seem to be working at all. But I don't really have anything else beyond that. Like, the Canucks need to play better, and if you're going to make the playoffs, you should be putting teams like Philly to bed. Hell, with a 3-0 lead, you should have put a team like Edmonton to bed last night in the season opener as well. I mean, yeah, you nailed it. I don't know. Are we getting away from the on ice stuff right now? Because it kind of seems like you had anything else to say about like specifically what happened in Philly. Go ahead now. Or did you want to run JT Miller audio here? Or who's saying you seem like?
In terms of on ice specific stuff, I just had like some deployment issues for how this game went. I don't know if we want to get into that. I'm gonna say Vasily Podkolzin is probably the Canucks' best forward tonight. I love Bruce Boudreau. You know, Bruce, there it is, everybody. Obviously, Bruce, there it was the way this season has started. But, I mean, this Podkolzin ice time tonight was concerning in my eyes. He played probably the best game, like I said, out of all the forwards. He made the great play on the Connor Garland goal with a great pass there. I mean, I think so far, even in the Edmonton game, he's probably looked the best on his line with Garland and Horvat. I mean, this is not the last we're going to be talking about Bo Horvat. Bo Horvat's going to be a reoccurring theme in today's episode. And we're not gonna hold back on him. He's looked invisible. This is the first game where I thought Garland looked good. I thought he played pretty well. But Podkolzin's probably been the best player on that line.
Whoa. You said this is the first game you thought Garland looked good?
In this season, yeah. I didn't think he played
that good. What the hell are you talking about? Last podcast, you talked about, you said on this podcast, Garland was the guy's best forward. I don't know.
I still think I'm
going to fundamentally disagree with that notion that he had a good game in Edmonton. He had no
He had no shot at it. Let's move away from that. I'm just saying Podkolzin. I think all three of us would agree Podkolzin has been the best on that line.
Can I interject on something here? Can I say something here?
Yeah. Yes.
Two things. Number one, you're down 3-2 and there's 3 minutes left and Bruce Boudreau is going to be the fourth line of shift. That should tell you all you need to know about how happy he was with the performance of his big guns.
Yeah.
Number one. The second thing was, I agree, Podkolzin had a pretty solid game, but he's the guy who hasn't been used on any special teams, and this game specifically was penalties galore. Especially the Canucks were very shorthanded. Podkolzin didn't play the power play or the penalty kill. You can gripe about that. You can say, hey, you know what? I think Podkolzin could be getting out there on the power play, getting out there on the penalty kill, whatever. At this point with the power play, I'm willing to try anything because I'm really tired of what we're seeing right now. I don't personally think Podkolzin might be the answer on the power play, but I wouldn't mind seeing him get out there to kill. I don't think the Canucks' penalty kill looked particularly good. I don't have the penalty kill numbers in front of me, to be honest, but I don't think they look particularly good. So I wouldn't mind seeing that, just giving him a chance to get in the game, because there was a lot of penalties right in the first period. And I think he had less than 2 minutes of ice time in the first period. And I was listening to the intermission show on 650. We have the texters texting in saying, oh, I'd love to see Podkolzin play more. But at the end of the day, if it's a guy who's not going to play any special teams, and it was a penalty filled period, it's going to be hard for them to get that ice time. So, until Podkolzin is kind of suspended himself as a killer or a power play guy, I don't really see that his ice time changing, to be honest with you.
Sure, I agree. I'm just saying, Podkolzin was a low minute man on the Canucks by a lot tonight. He played 9:21. He had 13 shifts only. And then I look at a guy like Nils Höglander, who's been slotted next to Pettersson so far the entire year and most of the preseason. What has that Pettersson and Kuzmenko line had in common? What's been a reoccurring theme other than the first shift that game? They're generating chances. Nils Höglander can't finish. What does that sound like to you? What happened last year? This guy went like 2 months in a row playing with other good players after his outstanding, outstanding rookie campaign. And he came back next year, and his biggest problem was this guy can't finish. I look at Nils Höglander. I have the numbers in front of me here. He played no minutes shorthanded either, and he still played just over two more minutes than Podkolzin. You know, to me, I just don't think that's deserving opportunity. Even a guy like Dakota Joshua, Nils Åman. Nils Åman played six more minutes than fucking Podkolzin. Okay? I get the shorthanded time involved, but I don't see why you're sitting. Not even sitting. Like, why are we not deploying one of our best wingers in a position to succeed? Dakota Joshua's been invisible in my eyes, too, in both these first two games. And he also played 2 to 3 minutes more than Podkolzin. I'm just saying, you know, in a game like this, you know, you mentioned it there. You know, start taking your fourth line out in the third period when you're down a goal. You know, that tells you all you need to do. I completely agree. If your best players aren't playing your best, don't play them. But I don't see what's wrong with playing a hot hand. Switch the lines up. They weren't working. The Pearson-Miller Besser line was atrocious. It's been atrocious in the first game against Edmonton. It was god-awful tonight in Philadelphia. Like, one of the worst performances I've ever seen from a Miller-Besser duo. So all I'm saying is, I don't know what the reluctancy was to switch Podkolzin. I get that he doesn't play special teams, but I still think he had a pretty good night. You look at his... I mean, he wasn't on for any goals against. Had 3 shot attempts.
Only one guy was on for all the goals against.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to get into that. He had 3 shot attempts and 1 shot on goal. I mean, that's popping off this chart when you look at the box score for tonight's game compared to some of these other forwards.
You want to jump in there? I mean, I agree with you guys. I think Podkolzin needs to get a lot more ice time. He creates a lot of space when he's out there. He actually makes space when he's on the ice. He's not the most fleet of foot guy. But when he gets the puck on his stick, he makes things happen. He might not pop off the page with point totals and stuff, but he's a guy who helps you win night in and night out. And like you said, Hussein, you kind of outlined there are players who were not deserving of their ice time today who were playing a lot more. Yes, special teams like plays a factor, like you mentioned. But they're, you know, Podkolzin is cementing himself as one of the better players in this league, okay, in this team. Sorry.
I got to step in here. I'm sorry. I get there's a lot of guys who aren't deserving their ice time, but I mean, look at these power play numbers tonight. The power play ice time for JT Miller, 758. Pedersen, 721. Horvat, 758.
Kuzmenko, 456.
Kremenzo, 456. Yeah. Besser, 429. Those are, you know, your big guns there getting, you know, 5-7 minutes of power play.
Power play was super effective tonight, guys.
My point is that, you know, in the second game of the season, your coach is most likely not going to take your top-end talent off the power play. If he's going to start the fourth line and 3 minutes left, why the fuck would he not just change to the power play?
All I'm saying is, if you're that...
Especially if Podkolzin is the only one of the players who's actually creating some goddamn offense.
That's
so
what I'm saying. If you're so reluctant to play your big guns, because rightfully so, they played bad. I'm not even saying that they played
good.
How can you justify
a guy like Bo Horvat, who didn't even attempt a shot till 1 minute left in this game? Pearson, Besser didn't attempt a shot until
Besser didn't even get a single shot on goal tonight.
Exactly. How can you?
And you had a guy like Connor Garland who threw 3 on net. He scored in this game, and he played 4 minutes less than him. And Connor Garland, you can't even say he doesn't play special teams. He still gets on the second unit. Which, to be fair, Bruce Boudreau was splitting them almost a minute apiece later in this game. I mean, that first unit was not staying on for the whole time. I mean, rightfully so, they were playing terrible. So, like, you know, again, I just think. I really think, I'm not even saying, you know, Bo played a bad game, but I think that winger set of Podkolzin and Garland deserve more looks tonight.
I'm not going to go
after Bruce. You know, obviously, I think he's a good coach. He did a lot of things right last year, and I'm not going to get up in arms about it just because of one game and one loss to Philadelphia.
I get what you're saying, but my anger and angst right now is not towards Boudreau deploying players or whatnot.
It's the players themselves. Yeah, sure.
What are you going to do as a coach? Game two, you're going to take off your star players? Off the power play because they can't get it done. If they're 1 for 13 on the power play, I got to think about it.
Talking about a player not getting it done, do you want to kick to what the Canucks star player had to say about his own performance?
He needed more time than that. Hussein, come on, be a professional.
It's okay.
Yeah, we got JT Miller audio here. This is JT Miller after the loss in Philadelphia, and he's not happy with his game.
I mean, it sucks, but I don't really have the right to talk about the team at the moment. I mean, I take this upon myself to be a better player. It's not playing to my standards, so I'm not going to comment on behalf of the team. Team's battling. You know, it's not going great for us finishing the games, but it's not like we had a good start today by any means. We just happened to be up two.
The puck bounces on you there. You had the slip and was on the first goal or second goal. I mean, you must be feeling very frustrated.
I've been on for all 8 goals. Pretty frustrated.
So, is there a simple solution to the power play not giving up shorthanded goals? I know you attack it with an offensive mindset. But.
Yeah, we're not finishing on our looks, so, you know, we're presenting chances for them to get, I guess, but worst case scenario is letting them get momentum off of our power play. So,
yep. Last question about IMAC there. Are you worried about the power play giving up so many shorthanded goals? The power play is so bad, we're worried about the other team scoring more than we're worried about the fact we can't put the puck in the net. That's really all it needs to take. And like JT Miller said, he's the only player who's been on the ice for every single goal against
this connection. It's okay, JT, you can swear on this podcast.
Yeah.
We swear about you all the time.
Yeah, so, I mean, Ace, I know what you're saying. Yes, you're not going to dent your star players off the beginning of the season. Boudreau doesn't have a contract. Horvat doesn't have a contract. There's a lot of uncertainty going into the season where we want to have a good start. The team needs to have success off the bat. All those things would indicate to me that maybe if it's not working, we should try something else to try to win this game, because these guys had 55 minutes, 58 minutes to do something, to put a puck in the back of the net, to do anything, and they didn't. Yet they're the people you put out in the last couple minutes to try to tie the game. I don't see the logic in that. On a team where you have... At the end
apparently,
of the night...
One second.
Apparently in a team that you've added a lot of quote-unquote depth to, I don't see you trying that depth when you actually need offense in a few different
levels. I don't know about this. I agreed with your deployment earlier. If the game's on line and you're pulling a goalie, I don't care how bad Elias Pettersson plays or how bad JT Miller plays. Okay, maybe... You know what?
No. Pettersson and Hughes are the only two players that I can never bench for how bad, even if they have...
Sure, I agree with that. Okay, fine. Tonight, the Canucks pulled their goalie. Yeah. They got that power play at the end. What is Coach Santamed putting on the ice?
I'm going Hughes, Pettersson, Garland, Pod Colson, and then I'm thinking I'm probably going to go with Kuzmenko.
And you have the pulled goalie, so you can take one more.
I mean, honestly, I'll take Ekman-Larsson.
You have it here, folks. Santamed would sit Brock Besser, JT Miller... And Bohorna.
Oh, yeah. Those guys who combined for two... How many shots are those guys combined for? Fucking three? Maybe one? Kyle Burrows had more shots on goal than Besser, Horvat, Miller, and Hoglander combined. So, yeah. I mean...
Well, Kyle Burrows played good today. Let's not get into Kyle Burrows.
Good for Kyle Burrows. As Tortorella once said about David Booth, if David Booth is the best player on the ice, it's great for David Booth. It's bad for Canucks. Same logic applies to Kyle Burrows. Yeah, and you know what? I love Kyle Burrows, man. He has played... His sack off for this team. He's done everything you could have asked for an undrafted guy, undersized defenseman, not the greatest skater. He's come to camp, earned a spot 2 years in a row. He was not on the radar to make this team at the start
especially this year.
Yeah. Even last year coming in, there was very little thought that he was going to start on the team. He ended up playing pretty much the whole season for the Canucks last year. This season, even less so, because the Canucks apparently added some players. They had some more defense than he was competing with. He beat out tons of, not the world beaters, but you know what? A guy like him, he comes to camp, works his sack off, beats these guys out, comes, plays game one, has a pretty solid night, doesn't get scored on by McDavid when he's on the ice. Game two, scores a beautiful goal, gets into a fight, steps up for a teammate. He's out there ribbing pucks at the net, throwing hits, doing his thing. You know what? What more can you ask for from a bottom pairing defenseman? But you know what? If that's the bright spot for a team that's supposed to be making the playoffs, I got news for you. That's not good news for the Canucks. Yeah, I mean, I agree. Let's start looking at this at a macro level here, guys. What's the cause of Canucks slow starts? This is extended past regimes, past coaches. The only thing that has been consistent is most of the players on this team.
Yep.
Why can the Canucks not have good starts to seasons and games?
Well, you see, this is where it gets kind of interesting. The game in Edmonton, you would say the Canucks had a good start.
Like today,
you know, they didn't necessarily play their best. But they still had kind of the start you needed. You're going up two. So they kind of flipped. I kind of look at it as this team can't play a full 60 minutes for some reason. Last year it took too long
to
get
a bad start to the season. Like the Canucks are
0-2. I get that. And it's a player's mindset. And I think, you know, this is going to sound a little old man hockey jargony here. But when the Canucks are on the power play, like, oh man, I'm really going to sound like an old guy. They look too relaxed for a group of players that have not accomplished shit all. JD Miller standing upright to take a fucking wrist shot. Okay, this just bothers me. I know some people might disagree with this, but like, you haven't proved shit. Neither has Pettersson. This team hasn't gone anywhere. The power play's been so inconsistent, except that first year that he got here. But we're going to stand around on the power play and act like we can whip it around and we can score at will and we can do this and we can do that. And it's okay, we've been here and we've done that. What have we done? We missed the playoffs every fucking year. This team... It looks too relaxed and too... I'm not even sure if it's arrogant. I'll use the word arrogant, for a team that hasn't accomplished
anything. This extends back to preseason,
and I get it that you should have some swagger when you play.
I would agree with this.
I get
the Canucks' main thing with them when you're watching them play right now. It's like
too relaxed.
It seems like it's a lack of urgency, lack of accountability, or just a straight lack of.
Want
just puck management and effort, and it's a major concern to me if an NHL team is just so lax with the puck. You know what I'm saying? Like, even bad teams, you're gonna see there's some level of puck management. They're not just flinging the puck all over the place, throwing it up the middle like they don't care. And when you're watching the Canucks, not even
there's no pizzas
on the power play, especially, you just see this where it just seems like they're just so nonchalant with the puck, where they're just not worried that you know, we're just gonna do what we want. Like the other team's penalty kill, they're not going to try to spring one on us, you know what I'm saying? Like, the breakaway, Miller kind of gets caught, and I mean, it's an overrated notion, it's a little thing, but I was not impressed with his effort on the back check there.
I wasn't
kind
either.
Of gliding back.
He had two
lines. It's similar when you talk to these guys, you know, I mean, baseball fans, you get upset, you know, in September baseball, and you have a guy not running hard to first, right? It seems like a small thing, but until, you know, you have a fly ball to center field that you think is a home run, and you're jogging to first, and then you realize it's off the wall, and you're throwing it at second. It's the same kind of thing, you know what I'm saying? Where you just think, like, oh, well, you know, it's fine, nothing's going to happen, you're just not skating back hard. And I can't explain why that is. Is that a bad mix of players? Is that a lack of accountability? Is that a coaching issue?
Weird
is it? But it's been two different coaches, and the same thing seems to be happening, and those same coaches seem to be playing the same guys, because... You know, they're going to do what's best for their job, and they're going to play their most skilled guys, I guess, but, you know, it's easy for us to sit here and say, oh, we should have benched JT Miller, but, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're a coach, you're not working here next year, you're going to say, oh, yeah, well, you know, 3 minutes left, I was playing Dakota Joshua on the power play? Well, why is that? Why is that, Bruce? Or why is that, Travis? I was unhappy with JT Miller's effort. It's kind of hard to defend in a job interview.
Well, just the way Bruce was rolling the lines in the third period there, I was just, honestly getting like flashbacks of like the end of the Travis Green era here, where like, no, I know you're laughing, but like it's kind of the same thing when Matt Highmore and Juho Lamico were going out the boards before he got fired in December.
Yeah, I mean, I would say
I'm
that.
Not saying Bruce is getting fired.
Like, what? Weird.
I mean, is he not?
Weird.
Is he not on the hot seat?
Is he not on the hot seat? He has no contract. And should he be? Is he fully absolved?
Sure, I guess. I don't know.
You're fully absolving the coach. The management group came out of the offseason and did not give him a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, I get it. Bruce Boudreau's not their guy.
Is it possible that's seeping into the team?
You don't think he feels the pressure?
Is that seeping into the team, though?
But, okay, one second. You guys are talking about arrogance and nonchalance. Where does that come from with this group? A group that has not done anything, as Hussein outlined earlier? They won one round.
Why would they feel the pressure to move? We haven't accomplished anything, but it's okay. Oh, Besser gets paid. Miller gets paid. Pedersen, we all get paid. Nobody cares. There's no accountability. No one's getting traded. It's fine. Besser had a bad year. It's fine.
He got
a contract extension.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, we just need some more players. Let's get Mikheyev. Let's get Garland. OEL. You know, let's just bring in more guys. More guys who get paid. But what were the consequences of your poor seasons? Who got shipped out of town?
Not us.
No, not us.
Not me. Who would have thought?
It wasn't our fault. It was Beagle's fault. It was Lucelle's fault.
Dickinson,
whatever.
No, we got two people their jobs, too. Like, I'll be that guy.
We got,
you got your general manager and your coach fired, too.
You got your coach fired, for sure. General
you let Travis Green. Travis Green was...
I mean, okay, I get they didn't get their general manager fired, but I mean, if that's nothing... If you...
Feel
well,
nothing...
If you're Brock Besser or Pedersen or Horvat, and you're sitting there and you're seeing your general manager get fired, and you feel nothing... That is a red flag to me.
No, I agree, 100%. The guy who...
You must have some level of confidence. You know, that guy brought us here, and he's gone.
He
now,
believed in us.
He believed in us, and he's fired because of that? That reflects poorly on me.
He's fired because I couldn't do
don't think that, though. There hasn't been any lack of... Like, there's been a lack of accountability on their part. Why would they feel the pressure? Yeah, you're right. Like, where are the consequences? Well, again, this kind of leads me to my thing here. Like, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to quickly say, like, in, like, these recent years, like, who's the last Canuck player you can think of which is like, we got to trade this guy because he played bad? No one. It's no one. That's the answer. It's no one. Sam Gagner, maybe, who apparently gave waived to the AHL, ruined his reputation with Jim Binning. That's a separate thing. Jake Virtanen, maybe?
Got this core needs a shake up, man. No team... It's very rare you find a team that just drafts their entire core and then nothing. That is it. They don't create anything. They don't do anything. They don't make no shakeups. I mean, you look at the 2011 Canucks. Like, that core was not all drafted. Hell, one of the biggest pieces they acquired was Roberto Luongo in one of the biggest trades they ever made. Krasnov.
Also part of the trade.
Yeah. Dan Hamhuis, clearly a great player for them.
I mean, it's really like the biggest.
My point was they didn't just keep running it back with the same teams they had. They had to put good teams in 2009.
Okay, I'm sorry. At the end of the day, 2011 Canucks, they reached the heights. The main reason the Vancouver Canucks reached those heights. Luongo was probably an exception to this rule. Like he came to Vancouver and was instantly like a Vezina caliber goaltender. The scenes were not hard trophy winners when Roberto Luongo arrived on the scene. Ryan Kessler was not a trophy winner. No, they. As Grant says, Grant's always these three guys specifically. The Sedins and Kessler. These three guys specifically. I target them, and I say these guys leveled up their game to a level you didn't think they had, and that made them elite, and that made the Canucks a Stanley Cup contender. If let's just say the Sedins in 2011, they just were good players, not 85 point guys. 85
team's
point
nowhere
guys.
Near where it
that
was.
Team never makes sniffs the Cup final. Never sniffs the Cup final.
They're probably losing second round.
Patterson and Hughes aren't what we think they can be. This team's not gonna sniff it.
This team's fucked.
You can't win the Stanley Cup with just pretty good guys. You need some guys to level up their game to a level that you didn't think they had.
Okay.
And right now, this core is being challenged to find that level.
And they're withering.
And they're not even embracing the challenge.
Yeah,
that's the problem with me. These guys don't even look like they care.
I'm not just saying Patterson Hughes. JT Miller's coming for 99 points.
The biggest one's Brock Besser.
Brock Besser.
From his rookie year, this guy came here. Canucks fans, you know, me alike, I love the guy on the scene. I remember I used to buy tickets to the Dark Ages to watch this guy play. Because of that wrist shot, we drafted a first-line right winger. Brock Besser is going to be a 30-goal scorer. He's going to be the winger of the future that this team needs. He has not taken a step. You could probably argue he's only taken steps down since his rookie season.
Yep.
What's Brock Besser's height now? It's definitely not what you thought it was when we drafted him and when you saw in that rookie year. Now you'd just be happy if Brock Besser can play like a full freaking 70 games.
Yeah.
He's plateaued.
Obviously,
he's not taking a step.
I'm sorry, but like some players, not every single player you draft is going to level up into Barkov and Huberto like they do in Florida, man. Like, not every player becomes that, you know? Some players fizzle out and become something worse than that. I can't think of a guy off the top of my head. But you need to get those guys to level up to a level where they are, you know, elite players in the NHL. And this group is being challenged to get to that level right now. And I'm looking at Horvat and Miller. These guys look like they're the veteran leaders of this team, and they're not even stepping up to the plate at all. And I'm not even expecting Horvat and Miller to be like 99-point, you know, hard trophy Selke winning guys. I just want you to be
the same level you
were at last year. People who thought this team was good said, look at 57 games under Boudreau. It's a 100-point team. Look at these paces these guys are under Boudreau. So was that just good? Like, what was that then? What was that? You have that level in you. We've seen it before.
It's obviously not good luck. 57 games is a long time.
We've seen it for an extended stretch that you guys can be successful. So what is it that's holding you back from doing that now? And you can't blame the coach. It's the guy you did under last year.
Does it come down to effort? And like,
I hate to question a professional athlete's effort, but that's what it looks like at this point.
I mean, for a guy like Horvat, it definitely seems
like... It looks like he's not even trying.
I don't know if the... We can speculate about whether or not... We'll never really truly know the answer of whether or not the contract is weighing on him, I guess. Until, you know, if he signs a contract extension or gets traded. We'll never really know if he... If it was weighing on him, Miller, it seems like that the looming uncertainty of his future suddenly made him play better last year. And now that he's got that certainty, I don't know if I don't really want to say that he's mailing it in, but I mean,
I'm not going to either.
I'm watching the guy play and I was like, what else can I really reasonably say? What could be the cause of it? I know he's a good player.
I don't know about that. Like,
you don't know if he's a good player?
No. I don't know about like that he's mailing it in entirely. Because, you know what?
Were you watching that effort? You're telling me that you think that guy's... There's a guy who's going 110% right
I'm
now?
I'm saying at the
he's
start,
doing his all
start of the year, I had my questions about it. The first game in Edmonton, 3 minutes into the game, when the Canucks need a good start, he makes a great play. He goes and snipes one on Jack Campbell. Okay? I looked at that, and I was like, you know what? Maybe I was wrong. Okay? JT Miller cares. He's going to have a good season. I'm not really worried about what happened in the preseason with the effort there. I get it. Obviously, in the 5 periods since that, not even arguably, he has outright been this team's worst player. And I don't even think it's up for discussion. Are we just going to sit here and say that those 5 periods have made it? That's determined that he's mailed it in? For a guy who spent his entire summer talking about how he wants to win here and all this. Or is that all just talk for the contract?
Talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. He talks cheap, all of it, he wants to be defensively sound, and I haven't seen any change in his defensive effort or positioning or skill. Maybe he can never get to that level. Maybe he just doesn't have the hockey IQ.
Well, maybe he shouldn't play center. Doesn't have
the two-way ability to do that. Maybe he shouldn't play center. That's a great shout, Hussein. His best season in Vancouver was that 2018-2019 season, and he was on the wing the most the whole season. And we haven't seen him back in the wing since then. And I'm telling you, the guy I'm watching play right now, that's not the same guy that I saw the Canucks bring in. No, that first year he was here?
He's not the same guy. I fucking instantly loved after he got here.
I mean, JT Miller last season had a terrible, like, he was terrible defensively. He had a lot of miscues. He had doing a lot of the same sort of turnovers you're seeing this season. But the difference was he scored a 99-point clip at the beginning of the year. And, you know, if a guy like that is making a lot of defensive errors, but he outscores most of his problems, you're going to overlook some of these gaffes. But JT Miller, we all know, is not really truly a 99-point player. So you can't overlook those defensive deficiencies. You can't, because you're not going to outscore your problems.
I mean, as for
team... And on a team like the Canucks, where your blue line is so deficient already, you are accounting for your forwards to be, you know, to steal Chris Faber's term, have that dog in him. And, you know, he's not playing with that dog in him right now. Agreed. I mean, I cannot disagree with that. This leads me to my next thing. You guys are talking about no changes to the core and all this stuff. This is a theory I have, okay? The nuclear option has to be on the table. This group, they said we want to reset Horvat. Horvat playing the season with no contract extension. They insisted that JT Miller not extend his no-move clause that's on his 8-year contract to this season. They had the option, reportedly. Sorry, they did have the option, and reportedly JT Miller asked for it, and they said no. Seems like a weird seems like a weird thing to insist on. Why would you insist on not having a no move clause for a guy you just signed an 8-year contract that you said part of the core wants to be here, etc. Has a full no move clause the year following. Seems like a weird thing to insist on. You already paid him. So ask for a no move clause, might as well give it to him. You're probably not gonna trade him this year if you think the team's playoff contender and you added all these pieces. They added enough around the edges that it's still movable. Mikheyev, Garland, these guys can all still get traded if the Canucks wanted to, you know, go far still. If this group fails, they still have that, you know, break glasses case of emergency red button to push. And they can say, hey, we gave this group a shot to prove themselves. And, you know, they shit the bed, which looks like they're doing right now. I think that has to be on the table. And it seems like maybe something that Alvey and Rutherford thought about. Because the things they've done, it seems like they've left themselves an out.
That's pure speculation
on my part.
Jeff Merrick and Elliot Friedman have both kind of dropped that nugget
on the radio that they said that, you know, there would be teams interested.
Even after the contract. Okay.
I don't know about all that.
Obviously, we're not in
that. I mean, it's a good shout. It's weird, I would say, but I have a hard time seeing a team trade.
I believe when I see it. Don't get me wrong.
I mean, I'm just saying, that nuclear option is on the table.
Sure.
Let me throw this back. Why not just sign Horvat? Why not just give Miller's no move clause?
Well, why not just throw this back? I'm not saying the nuclear option isn't there to blow this entire thing up. If you're Albion and Rutherford, are you really reaching for that right now?
No, into the year.
Your biggest signing hasn't even played a game yet. He's literally IR'd still. You technically haven't even seen the best of your team. We had the huge Tyler Myers debate. This is defense right now. Let me tell you something.
I mean, I see a Booze Boudreau firing much before I see a JT Miller or a Bo Horvat trade.
Yeah. Well, one, because it's easier to make happen. Yeah. You can make it happen no matter what. It's not contingent on anything else. Miller and Horvat's like, we got to find a team that's willing to take all this money. Or I guess in Horvat's case, you just need to be able to take $5 million for one season.
Not even. You could retain half.
Rental. Yeah, you're right. Rental. And for JT Miller, it's like, you need to find someone who's going to be willing to take a fucking boatload of cash that you just signed for.
Well, I mean, you only need to find it for this year. You know, you need to find it for next year or so.
True. But still, I mean, I'm just saying, I don't think that is not a theory. I'm just saying, you know, if you're Albion and Rutherford, you know, what? How long is that timeline? Is it Thanksgiving? Is it in this calendar year? Is it in the next calendar year?
It's the trade deadline.
You think it's just the trade deadline if the team's not...
It's got to be sooner than that.
I think it's got to be sooner than that also.
The American Thanksgiving, buddy, that's the benchmark everybody sees. You're in the playoffs by American Thanksgiving, you're most likely going to make it. You're most likely not going to make it. Teams do not make it.
Pretty much always. Like, this 99.99%.
The last team that dated was the St. Louis Blues. So...
Unless you think the Canucks are the St. Louis Blues.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's you see these remarkable comebacks, and it's only once every 5-10 years you see a team like that do it. So... You know what? If you're fucking flailing, if you're spiraling, if the same things that we are seeing right now are plaguing the Canucks then, something's got to give. And that probably would be a Bruce Boudreau firing, because if things aren't going that right in American Thanksgiving in about a month or so here, you are, I mean, I don't have a more eloquent way to put this, but I would say high key fucked.
How is firing another coach going to solve any problems?
Well, I'm just going to say one thing about firing the coach. Alvin Rutherford...
This is not their coach.
He's not their guy. They didn't hire him. Everyone from the beginning knew. Francesco Aquilini went out and got Bruce Boudreau himself, and then he's like, now I'm going to get general manager. Okay? So you can look at this two ways. It's likely that Bruce Boudreau gets fired because he's not their guy, or it's even more unlikely that he gets fired because Francesco, meddling owner, we love to talk about it in this market. We never stop talking about it. He says, Jim, you can't fire him. I hired him. I want him here. It doesn't matter what you want, Jim Rutherford, because I'm Francesco Aquilini.
If he was, then why would he just not tell Jim I want to sign this guy to contract extension? Jim obviously didn't sign him because he lets him go. Can I ask you guys a question?
What is the main thing that was wrong with the Canucks? Structurally. The poor puck management, defensively. Are these things that you think of when you think of Bruce Boudreau hockey?
No.
No.
Of course not.
Then why would that... you asked me why what was a new coach going to solve. Some of these structural issues, hopefully, because these seem like coaching issues.
Do you really think the NHL coach is going to come in and use this defense core and be like, yeah, now we're going to play...
Yeah, we're running Stillman, Burrows, and fuck's sakes, Pullman on one side. I don't care who your coach is. There's no
chance. Show me a good coach, I'll show you a good team. You know what? Show me a good coach, show you a good goalie. But yeah, Hussein is right. Like, I don't, you know what, man? Like, you can't bring
that team. What do you
like? I'm sorry, at the end of the day, but I can't make chicken salad or chicken shit, buddy. Right? If it's shit, it's shit. I can't make it. You know, you can
that blue line won't even hold to win a Calder Cup in the AHL. Like, honestly,
you can dress it up however you want to, but it's still a shitty blue line, Ace. So who does that ultimately fall on? Is that,
well, now we're really going down the wormhole here.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's Jim Benning.
Yeah, you're not going to hold it against Alvin and be like, fuck, I came here and I mean, trade this shit.
How can I not hold it against Alvin? Can I not hold it against Alvin and Rutherford? Jim Benning is gone. He's faced the consequences of his actions. This is your show now, Alvin and Rutherford. You had all summer to fix the defense,
and you didn't do anything.
You didn't even try to. But you said you were going to.
But you were ready to attach a sweetener to Jason Dickinson.
This more to the nuclear option, people. They left themselves the nuclear option. They're outlining things that I can say. They want the team to fail so they can sell at the deadline. And then point to that goalie and be like, hey, look, we suck, man.
That'd be some real...
I believe it when I see it. I think we can move on from this topic here. Yeah. I mean, my next thing is something rotten in the core. We kind of outlined that maybe yes. Yeah, I think we kind of talked about this.
Yes was the conclusion answer.
I mean, it's hard to know. We don't know. We're not there. So I mean, we heard the Bohor interview, and you guys saw the video. He looked sad.
I don't care if he looks sad. Play better then.
Do you guys think Horvat is like a guy who is like one of those guys who just can't stop thinking about his contract and it's really, really affecting
him? Yes, definitely. Bo Horvat definitely checks the
box. It's purely speculative, but I mean, yeah, what else could you explain?
He just has that kind of personality.
Do you guys think JT Miller checked out and just thinks that he's happy with his money? I think JT Miller I don't know what about JT Miller. Horvat, I definitely think, is feeling a bit slighted by the organization. I think that he's been a company man, and it's showing that.
Yeah, no, you know, and I give him credit for that. I give every bit of credit for being a company man.
But I mean, I really feel like it's showing up right now. It's just not his gem. He doesn't look happy. He doesn't look engaged. And, you know, it's hard not to. You put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah, I mean, I feel for the guy.
Yeah, I feel bad for Horvat. He's been here through some of the shittiest hockey in this franchise history. He sees all these guys around him getting paid. You know, he sees a guy who comes in, who gets traded for by this team, get paid. You know, JT Miller.
And now you can't serve the guy who's...
Now you can't seem... Now suddenly we're out of money. And I'm the one who's on the outs, even though I've given it my all.
I'm the captain.
Here, I'm the captain of this team. I got us to a playoff series. I scored 10 goals. You know? And now I just feel I'm a little discarded. I don't know. That's just what it looks like to me.
And I've seen worse people... Like, significantly worse players come in here and get money like that was, like, the easiest thing they had to do.
Yeah.
We signed people to 5x5s while watching them play. And I've been our second-line center for 8 years, and I can't get a contract.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I'm not blaming him.
Do you guys think that Horvat... It just seems like every year where it's like Horvat's going to be the guy. It's just, you know, a new shiny toy comes along. You know, Horvat's kind of the guy. Then Besser comes along, and Patterson comes along, and Miller comes along. You know what I mean?
Look, if you're a player, that's exciting too. You know,
you get better players, but I feel like, hey, you know what? Hey, don't forget about me, guys. I'm the one who's been here the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and like, I'm the captain of this fucking team.
To be perfectly fair, I mean, it took him like 7 years to get one of those new players to finally play on his line.
Yeah, I mean, Horvat was strapped
as a every guy who comes in, JT Miller got traded to be Bo Horvat's left wing partner because Ferland, Besser, Pedersen was supposed to be the first line. And the minute that puck dropped that season, it was Miller, Pedersen, Besser, and they didn't look back.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. They played well together. But who was Bo Horvat playing? He was busy being Louis Erickson's babysitter.
Yeah.
And Josh Levo. Just a random guy they got from for in the Toronto.
Was
he
a waiver wire?
No, Toronto.
No,
trade.
He was in the waivers.
We
traded Michael Caracchioni for
him. Caracchioni. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Great pull.
I didn't even look that up.
That's impressive. But yeah, like, you know? You know, like he was playing with Jimmy Vesey and Travis Boyd last year.
Like, I know we just went crazy critical on Horvat. Would you guys still sign Horvat if you had the option right now?
Well, I feel like his number should be a little bit lower, so yeah.
What's his contract ask? What would you offer, Bo Horvat?
6-2, 5-8 is the max I'm going.
You still offer him 8-year contract, eh? I mean, it seems like a good way to keep the AAV down. I mean, okay. At the end of the day, he you can say whatever you want about what kind of Horvat you think Bo Horvat is, but on the open market, the guy's getting paid for sure.
This goes two ways. If I was the
general, at the end of the day, he's getting paid for sure.
I agree with that. If I was the general manager of the team, I feel like I would have an inside track and a better knowledge what this core is like, where their head's at, and if I truly, at the bottom of my heart, believe that these players have what it takes to win a Stanley Cup, specifically that forward core, and you know, just add Quinn Hughes and Demko to it. The rest of them, you know, we could use some shuffling.
But the main thing for me,
I would do the 8 years.
If I was the GM of the Canucks right now, I'd say, hey, I call Pedersen, I call Hughes, come to my office, and I'm walking to my office and say, honest moment, this is never getting out of this room between you, the three of us right now. Do you think Bo Horvat is a good leader? Do you think he holds you guys accountable? Do you find him inspiring? They say no. Horvat's getting traded. They say yes. I got an extension.
Wow. I like that.
Do you think the players on the team would say yes? I have absolutely no idea. To be honest with you, I've got no fucking idea.
As a fan, does Bo Horvat inspire confidence in you as a captain?
No. I'm not going to lie to you. No, he never has. He's kind of got the same thing that, you know, Marcus Naslund got criticized for a lot in this market.
Seems like
he's a little boring. He seems disengaged. People, there's different ways to lead. Don't get me wrong. Maybe he's a great leader. I don't know. You know what I mean? The team, at the end of the day, we're going to judge the success of a leader based on the success of the team. And the team hasn't been successful under his leadership. I'm not naive enough to say that that's all his fault. Part of it is his fault, though. So I can't say he's fully absolved of what we've seen here, but I have really no idea where the players' heads are at, you know? So that's all I can really say. It's purely speculative. I have no...
Go ahead. No, the thing to me is I just don't see this team trading only one of Horvat or Miller. It makes no sense to me.
It's a complete waste of time for everyone. You did everything you did this offseason.
Get what in return? And is JT Miller your second line center of the future now? All of a sudden,
JT Miller's second line center of the future.
We've all seen him play.
Spoiler alert: you're not going anywhere.
Like, I don't think JT Miller can be a second line center in the NHL.
I don't think JT Miller can be a center in the NHL. Period. I'm sorry.
I think he can maybe play for you in a pinch. You know, like when you're, shorthanded, you got some injuries, you need a guy to step in for a night or two or like a week, maybe take some faceoffs and shit for you. Yeah, they can do that. Can he play center? I would say no. And I think long term, if the Canucks move forward to this core, it needs to be with JT Miller playing left wing on Elias Pettersson's line. They've shown insane chemistry together. Pettersson helps out a lot of defensive responsibilities. I don't see how that doesn't happen.
Oh my. This Bo Horvat talks about me feeling some type of way right now.
Yeah.
As for that, has he inspired me as a leader?
Actually, as a fan, do you
or
think?
Or as a fan, yeah. Like, Ace is kind of right. I don't know. Honestly, if you ask me,
I like him.
2 years
do
ago.
Do I ever really feel like he inspired a lot of confidence in me?
In that first year where he was captain,
He's never out there dropping the soundbite, saying the good shit. Coming out guaranteed win. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. That's always
been
somebody
else. Yeah, Henrik Sedin never did that either.
Hey, you know what the difference between Bo Horvat and Henrik Sedin was, Hussein? Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert for you, buddy. Henrik Sedin won the Hart fucking trophy and was literally one of the best centers in the league.
I'm just saying, you had...
Not even one of the best.
He was the best playmaker
in the NHL and was a top five centerman during his time.
Yeah, that's the thing. I agree with that as well, Lace. Like, it's hard
at a certain level, it's like, yeah,
sure, I get that.
You can be like that, but if your play on the ice has got to be like that. And I would say Horace's play on the ice has not been at that level consistently at all for a lot of his career.
I mean, yeah.
Which is tough because there's a guy like
that. Do you really need a captain going out there guaranteeing wins and shit, though?
You know what? Sometimes you like to hear it. Or something, not even that. I just like to see him get into a scrum one time.
Yep.
That kind of goes back to what we were talking about last week.
Okay, but let me ask you a question.
season the Canucks made the playoffs. Remember? Drew Doughty said the whole team like that. Said the whole team like that thing, right? It all happened, right? Remember all that?
Horvat.
Remember? He seeked out, was it Patterson? To say the thing? He's like, hey, yeah, you know? Like, Drew Doughty, he said this shit and, like, it insulted us. And, you know, like, yeah, we are a team like that. That we're a team that beats the LA Kings 8-2. And he took some pride in that. And you were like, fuck yeah, bro. Like, I like that. Fans love that, right?
Fans love that. But you got to see it. You don't see it
more. But listen, in the playoffs that year, did Bodon inspire confidence in you in a different sort of way?
Yeah, he did because it was play on the ice.
And don't you think that you would love to see Horvat get that opportunity again? Don't you? You can see he has that ability in him. Like, he came out.
I don't doubt. He just scored. Agree.
He was completely like, St. Louis, game six, right? He was like, we're going to win this fucking game, right? And he does. I'm gonna solo St. Louis Blues in the playoffs, right?
That's not even that. Game one and game two, the Canucks were playing like ass, and he just put the team on his back, bro. He put the team on his back.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to hate on the guy.
I know you're not trying to hate on the guy. I'm just saying. I asked you guys if you.
It's a purely fan perspective. Yes, I'd love to see him back. I'd love to see him get the long term extension. I'd love to know that he's gonna be a Canuck for life. But at the end of the day, I'm just being pragmatic about this. It's just I'll say one more thing. Also,
yeah.
We start this podcast, you know, obviously we try to not be too biased. We don't wear rose-colored glasses on this. But really? At the end of the day,
Getting on my Canucks diaper here, sorry.
End of the day, we're fans. I don't cheer for the Canucks because of the players. I cheer for the Canucks because I like this team.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck who's on the team when they win a Stanley Cup, if they ever win a Stanley Cup in my lifetime. I get it. You know, I should be the last person saying this. I fall in love with players all the time, the most out of the three of us. I'm drawn to them. You get connections watching these people play every day. You have your favorites. That's fine. But don't ever let that outweigh what's best for the team. So if that means Bo Horvat shouldn't be our captain when the Canucks win the Stanley Cup, that's fine by me. Because at the end of the day, I don't care if Bo Horvat wins the Stanley Cup. I don't care that Henry Sedin and Daniel Sedin won't win the Stanley Cup. I just care if the Vancouver Canucks are Stanley Cup champions for one season. Regardless of who that's with.
No, yeah, I can't disagree. That's a great shout, Ace. I would agree with that.
I felt like good, like,
yeah,
pin to end the conversation.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, Ace. Hit me best bets intro. Let's get we're running. We didn't go around the NHL, so we're not gonna play that one this time. But we so much to talk about the Canucks this week. So yeah, we're about almost an hour. So just give me we can't hear anything. What's happening right now?
Wait a minute. Are we going to be okay?
No worries. So we're just going to go right to the best bets here.
We're going to Vegas, Mike. Vegas! You think we get there by midnight? Money, we're going to be up 500 by midnight.
Yeah! Vegas!
Vegas, baby. Vegas!
The timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry. Way down to bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
He's in the studio. He's singing that live.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He did our intro live. Okay,
so
now.
Great job with that drop bass. He's playing it over top of us talking and, you know, unmuting the microphone. And
hey, what's that sound? What's that sound clip titled on our soundboard here?
I can't say. Legal reasons. We've got to get the lawyers involved. Who is the lawyer that Rachel Dory hired? Oh, Peterson.
You mean the? Never mind. I couldn't get it. I couldn't get it off my tongue on time. Just never mind.
It was Peter Gale, right?
Something like that.
Yeah, we retained him for that lawsuit. Hussein.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we're mired in what do you call it?
Controversy?
Controversy. I was gonna say conspiracy, but that's not the word I was looking for. All right, best bets from the CSWC team brought to you by Bet99. I should say Bet99.net because that's where you have to go, obviously. But Bet99.
If you search Bet99, it'll come up.
Type in Bet99. It'll go. Bet99, the official.
No, don't type in Bet99. Type in Area 51 Sports Network.
Go there and press the link there.
Oh, yeah.
Listen up, people. Bet99, the official sports book of the Area 51 Sports Network. Using the link on the Area 51 Sports website, get up to a $600 bet match on your first deposit. That's the highest in Canada. So, like I mentioned, look up Area 51, then go to Bet99.
Is it bet 99 also? I've heard some people call it 99.
It's 99 for sure.
I always go 99.
99. 99.
We should move. All right. Relax, okay? We're walking a thin line. Yeah,
we got it. Good thing we got Peter.
We got Peter Gale.
We got him on a retainer.
This guy is good. Go ahead.
We got him on 51 money. We got him on speed dial.
That's why we play all licensed music on this. That's why we play all the licensed music on this podcast, buddy. We didn't pay for it, trust me. All right, who wants to go first?
You should have said that part.
That's fine. Come for me.
Alice.
All right, Hussein, you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. All right. I'm going to propose our listeners an option with my best bet this
week. No, coward's way out.
No, listen.
You're such a coward.
Plus 1,200 for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Shut up. I got to stop this segment right now.
Fine. I won't say the other one.
Is the worst gambler ever been my job?
You shouldn't say that right before our betting segment.
No,
why would you say that now? You should wait until they spend their money on the bet.
You don't care. As long as you go to bet 99.
Am I over something on this podcast?
Yeah, probably. That's you bet on the Jets.
We should start cracking. He's betting on the Jets again.
No, that's you. Oh, so now we're allowed to bet on the Jets? When the boss does it.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to mute our microphones. Listen. Hussein, whenever he tries to make these insane bets with me and Ace about keep his mic. No, I can't. Who would speak quiet? He makes these insane bets and he gets really upset when we talk, when we speak too critically with the Canucks when the game is happening because he gets really emotionally invested in it. So he starts to feel like he needs to make these crazy bets and he pencils in guys for crazy totals and things like that. And this is where the Kuzmenko bet actually originated from, where Hussein said that Kuzmenko was easy for 65 points. And he basically just worked his way down and then kept doing that again and again. And so I think who was the guy who's going to refresh my memory that you bet me?
Unmute me so I can talk, you mutant. Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Who's the guy we were taking a bet on, Paul Colson, right?
You and me?
Yeah.
Was it not you?
Yeah, it was Paul Colson. And you said Hussein said Paul Colson scored 30 goals this season.
No, wait,
I'm
gonna
say I said I'd bet on that it wouldn't happen. And then he's like, okay, deal. And as soon as we went to go to Shakeford, he's like, no.
What's the lowest number you think?
It'll be 25, and then it'll keep going down, like 23, 22. And try to negotiate. He'll be like, no, I don't care. You said 30, so let's bet on 30. And then he's like, what's the lowest number I could possibly go to that you would still say yes to? And that's his move every time, no matter what the bet is.
I ate Ace up like that. I said 85 points to Kuzmenko and got him down to 55. And the people who listen to this show agree with me that I'm going to win on that.
The coward's way up. Looks so good out there tonight.
Honestly,
so anyway, probably in the top that's half. My caveat with Hussein's bets. Do what you will with that information, people. Hussein, give people
plus 1,200 for the Carolina Hurricanes, the Caniacs to win a Stanley Cup. And as Ace and Haste love to know, I always say it, the people of Raleigh deserve a Stanley Cup, baby.
They already have one.
Doesn't matter, they deserve another one. Guy watched a game in an airport one time, and the other choice.
So I
won't say the choice. You know what? It's fine.
I'm glad Ace is not yelling at me.
I'll be a man of my word. Plus 1,200, but there's slightly better odds with the Edmonton Oilers at plus 1,400. Do what you will with that information.
I'm just glad Ace is.
I wish I didn't put
the plus 1,400 for the Edmonton Oilers to win the Stanley Cup. If you didn't understand what I was whispering,
I'm just glad Ace isn't yelling at us. That the episode's longer than an hour.
It is longer than an hour. And we have 2 minutes. Okay, so we're working on time. All right.
Start playing.
All right, Ace, what you got for the people?
All right. Keeping the Hurricanes team going. I got the Hurricanes at the Kraken on Monday night. The Hurricanes minus 1.5. Get them to cover. It'll get play plus 140.
Nice.
I always go NFL when the NFL season's on. Give me the New York Jets over the Russell Wilson-led Denver Broncos. Again, this bet is partly from an educated guess. I think the Jets are looking good. And partly out of spite. Hussein, we can hear you. Partly out of spite due to Russell Wilson. And as you all know, I hate Russell Wilson. So give me the Jets plus 167 on the money line over the Denver Broncos. Hey, you two done playing footsie over there?
Yeah, we are.
What do we got? What is it?
Broncos country.
Who's Ace going to play that?
I feel like you should have figured that Broncos one out by yourself.
Country. I couldn't hear
him. Well, now I can't even hear him. You keep talking.
All right, give him one more time.
Broncos country. Let's run.
There it is. I swear to God, that put us over an hour on the episode.
All right, Ace. Hit me the, not outro, but you know.
Russell, what are you?
Able to the outro.
Russell, what are you?
Get music.
Russell, what are you doing in our studio?
It's me only here. Thanks for listening to another week, everyone. Find us on all your major podcasting platforms. Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts, just look up Cap Space with Cups. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Cap Space Cups, which is super interactive, so check us out. If you don't listen for Apple iTunes, please go to Apple iTunes and leave us a 5-star
5-star review because
I'm 5-star man.
It really helps with the show. Also, go check out all the other great content on the Area 51 Sports Network. Point Shot Hockey Canucks Mafia, the Third Line Podcast, Terminal City FC, UFO Show, Fan Slam, and Fantastic Writing. It is your home for Vancouver sports content. That's all we got for this week's episode. Talk to you all next week.
Vancouver selects from the University of Michigan, Quinn Hughes. From Timrå, Elias Peterson. From Waterloo of the USHL, Brock Besser.
From the London Knights of the Canadian Hockey League, Bo Horvat.
To the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for JT Miller.
And Thatcher Demko with an amazing 43-save performance says, let's play game six.
Ladies and gentlemen, please make some noise and welcome the 14th captain of your Vancouver Canucks.